Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the numeral 4-KIDS.
MLB analyst Craig Calcaterra, author of the Cup of Coffee newsletter.
I don't know what I would have thought about Hernandez. He obviously is not this bad of a player. I definitely thought he would be a helpful piece, but Kimbrel is the one that's just blowing my mind. He blew that save the other day. He's just not, it's not just that he's been bad. He's been really shakily unreliable in the way that you just don't want a reliever. If you know what you're going to get, but it's just not quite his usual sharpness, that's something you could deal with. But I don't know what kind of confidence Tony La Russa could have right now in calling on Kimbrel, and especially when the mindset is, well, I can't use him to close out a game. But what, are you going to use him in an eighth inning, high leverage situation in October at this point? Because those are often, in fact, I would argue more often, where the games turn.
Craig Calcaterra with Bernstein and Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Let's talk some baseball with Craig Calcaterra, who joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He's on Twitter at Craig Calcaterra. He's the writer of the absolutely indispensable Cup of Coffee newsletter, which is the perfect way to start your day, baseball or otherwise. He's also on our Twitch stream, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. And Craig, I have to say, you got me. I've been had. I clicked when you said you had begrudgingly partnered with a gambling site. My first thought was, oh no, but I get it. That's where the money is, and he's self-employed. I understand it. And I didn't know the endless horse meme or like what it is, but what the hell, man? Like, you got me, but I didn't know anything about that particular link that you hot linked to.
Well, I didn't either. I'm 48 years old. I don't know things. So my daughter was walking around the house when I was writing that bit, and I just yelled, I said, hey, Anna, what's like a weird website that would just like make people scratch their heads? And she goes, Endless Horse. And
well,
so I looked it up, and there's just an Endless Horse.
It was just like, oh, no. And I'm there.
She knew it. She just knew it right off the top of her head. Oh, send him to Endless Horse. That's the one that'll be the good joke.
Site. Can I look this up at work? Is this safe?
Yes,
for work?
Yes, it's perfectly
it's totally safe.
Because I totally didn't get to that part of it.
It's got such an Anna vibe too, because it like you can see like her map making mind would just sort of find that mesmerizing.
Whoa. I love this.
Yes. And there are YouTube videos of people like watching it for 5 hours.
The title of the tab, like in the, you know how like tabs have headers? The header just says, who?
Yeah, that is, so you got me on that one. But to more uncomfortable things, the White Sox look to be in a bit of a spot here. Not only did Carlos Rodon leave under murky circumstances, throwing under 90 miles an hour, but something's wrong with Craig Kimbrell. Assess your level of White Sox nervousness, or assess mine.
Fairly nervous. I would feel less nervous if Rodon had been on regular rest and had been going and then just had a bad outing and felt sore, but like they gave him extra rest before that to deal with it. I think it's a case where he's just overworked. He hasn't pitched this many innings for a couple of years, and so he's probably just running out of gas a little bit. That said, you know, your magic number's 2 or whatever. You still have a couple of weeks before the playoffs start. I say you just rest this guy. Hopefully he'll be ready for the postseason. He seems to think it's not an issue. He got a little snippy last night, it looks like, when people kept asking him about it. But if Tony La Russa is saying he's concerned about it, I'd be concerned too. And that's definitely a problem. As far as Kimbrel goes, we talked about it last week a little bit, so I decided to look into it. Like, what really is the deal with him? I wasn't aware. His velocity has really been an issue in the second half. I'm sure White Sox fans are more aware of it. But if you go back and look historically, he has had velocity dips and you know, resurgences. I think a lot of it is a function of him just having a really funky delivery and a funky setup. He is one probably more than almost any elite pitcher in baseball whose mechanics impact his performance and whose mechanics are kind of difficult sometimes. His release point is so unorthodox. It's such a huge part of his game. If that's off a little bit, if his velocity is down a little bit, he's going to have problems. So, yeah, both of those things are concerned. There are also things that could snap right back into place as soon as October hits. So it's kind of hard to gauge or really to do anything about.
You know, Craig, you bring up a good point, and it's probably something that we don't talk about enough on this show. It's just good old-fashioned repeatable mechanics. And it's really easy with the eye test to see that Craig Kimbrell's can be difficult to replicate, even though he's been wildly successful with it. But I also flash back to the Red Sox playoff run when we really started to see kind of what we're seeing now out of Kimbrell. And then the Cubs were the ones who were able to harness what he was doing in a way that was really encouraging. So now I'm trying to figure out what were we seeing here? Was that the aberration, what we've seen this season, and even going back to last? Or is he reverting to a form that we've seen before, or is this something else?
I think there's a little bit of an illusion going on, too, in that he's not as good as he looked in the first half with the Cubs. If you look back at the numbers, and look, I'm not a big numbers guy, but because he's been such an issue lately, I decided to. His batting average on ball in play was really, really low, like outlier low with the Cubs. That means he's getting a lot of good luck, or he was getting a lot of good luck in the first half of the season when he was on the north side. His batting average on balls in play has been atrocious with the White Sox. Now, part of that's attributable to because the balls in play, they're hit harder because his velocity is down, but not that much. It's like 343, which is a crazy outlier. So he's getting bad luck now. He was getting abnormally good luck in the beginning of the season. There's just sort of an in-between there going on. I don't think he's as bad as he looks right now. But the thing is, that's been his whole career. Back when he came up with Atlanta, he would have those same sorts of issues. He would have good points. He would have bad points. I think you're right. It comes back to very difficult mechanics, hard to repeat. No one's ever really been able to fix him. I think he's his own best pitching coach, and he probably knows more than anybody that he has to do little tweaks here or there. Sometimes it just takes him a little while to find it.
Right, but BABIP doesn't usually lead to zero ERAs for an entire month.
No, but I mean, you could certainly pitch in better luck. I mean, that's definitely the case. I think when you're doing what he was doing in the first half, it's not all attributable. Oh, he found a new level, you know, a decade into his career.
Meanwhile, it's better to be a fan of the White Sox than it is a fan of the Padres right now. And I think the Padres collapse coincided with my announcement that I'm rooting for them, because that's what tends to happen. Is the moment I said, hey, that's a team that's spent money, that's a team that's competing, that's an example for other teams, that they're gonna go do everything they can do to try to win, and they know that winning costs money, and oh my god, what the hell is going on there? They're seeing, like, now some of the backbiting in the media and the names of people that are being inserted, so much of what's being written looks like there are people really talking to other people, and there's going to be jobs lost over this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that really ugly thing happened late Saturday night, like West Coast time Saturday night, when Machado was yelling at Tatis and everything. And middle of the afternoon on Sunday afternoon came the three-author byline athletic deep dive into all the strife in the Padres clubhouse. Okay, they didn't do that in the space of 12 hours. That's been reported for a while, and the decision was very clearly made by Ken Rosenthal, Dennis Lynn, and Britt Garoli of The Athletic. Okay, when we get to the point that we know this is going to be a great story, then we'll let it go. People have been talking for a while in San Diego. Jace Tingler, the manager, is probably a dead man walking. He doesn't have that clubhouse. Dave Dickerson, his bench coach. I've never seen a bench coach get called out in an article like that. Who calls out a bench coach? If the bench coach is getting that much ink about being a problem in the clubhouse, there are people talking. I think what's going to happen is A.J. Preller, the general manager, is going to go to Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis, and say, you guys are our team. Who's our manager? And I know a lot of old school baseball fans don't like that kind of thing, but I actually think that's what needs to happen. There needs to be someone in that position that those guys can respect and can respond to, because bringing in somebody who's never played, who never had a managerial position in Jace Tingler, who got that job primarily because of his relationship with Preller in Texas, that did not give him any sort of authority over a very volatile couple of superstars. I don't think that anything good is going to happen in San Diego until you get somebody who is a bit more of an authoritarian, someone who, if you're Manny Machado or if you're Fernando Tatis, you could say he's the boss. I mean, I threw out the name Bruce Bochy this morning because he used to be a Padres manager, and he's the sort of manager who I think could do that job. I don't really think he wants that job at this point in his life, but someone in that mold, like Bochy 10 years ago, would be a pretty good choice there.
Oh, I don't know. I think Bochy's name was thrown out with real reason whenever the White Sox had that brief managerial search. And if there's one thing we know about NL West people, Craig, is that they tend to stay in the NL West. So I wouldn't be surprised if Bochy was a reasonable choice. I will also say this. I think that there is some real truth to the fact that he wasn't qualified, Tingler. And eventually you're going to see that spoil. And we're seeing it right now at the most crucial time. I couldn't agree more when it comes to the relationship with Preller and how that all came to be. And there's a certain level of respect you have to have in a clubhouse in that position.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking, and it's not that you can't earn it. I mean, I think about A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch, a very, very successful manager, doing great things with a fairly bad Tigers team, obviously had success in Houston, even setting aside the cheating scandal. But his first go-around as a manager when he was in Arizona was terrible. And he had played in the big leagues. He just didn't have the clubhouse. He didn't have the authority. No one respected him coming in because they didn't think he was ready for that job. And then all of a sudden he got to be a genius in the next job. I think that could happen, but Tingler just didn't have that coming in there. And when you've got a difficult clubhouse and then when you have adversity, I mean, anybody can manage well when everything's going well. But when half your pitching staff goes away, when half of your lineup is just cratering in the second half, people need to look to you for leadership. He's not supplying it.
Layla loves to use the term sports monkey's paw, and it's always something wonderful that happens to your team, but it comes with a curse. And
it's called life.
Yes, it's the prism through which she and sometimes I tend to look at most things in life, and it's not always comfortable. But when you look at if you were to say to a Cubs fan, you know what, you're going to have a couple of breakthrough rookies on your team, and it's going to be a special season for a couple of these rookies, and say, oh, really, that's awesome. You know, unexpected, out of nowhere, guys you brought into the team from outside the organization who are rookies, who have breakthrough years. Well, that's great. However, each one's 30. And I'm thinking, is this like the new market inefficiency that somehow where the executive finds something that is thought to be unpopular or valueless in which he's able to find value? It's clearly not that. It may just be dumb luck, but in Patrick Wisdom and Frank Schwindel, what does it mean? How do you make it matter that you found something this late?
The way I think about it is, what if you had told a Cubs fan heading into the season that your first baseman and your third baseman, one is going to have a 186 OPS plus and the other one is going to set a record for home runs, you would be thinking, man, Bryant and Rizzo have us going to the playoffs again.
Right.
Yeah, just careful what you wish for. Someone did have the monkey's paw and said, I hope our first and third baseman had great seasons. That's totally what happened here. I don't know what you do with that. I mean, I think you got to manage expectations. You certainly can't, if you're Jed Hoyer, you certainly can't tell people that we are now building the next winning team around Patrick Wisdom. Great player, fun player, 30-year-old player who also, if you look at all of his peripherals, is outperforming what he should be doing. His power numbers are out of line with almost everything else he's doing and with where you could expect someone to progress in his career. So I think you have to be realistic. You have to be straight with Cubs fans. and say, these are fun players to have. And I think the analogy that I used, I was on someone's podcast recently. This is like, at best, Carlos Baerga with the mid-90s Cleveland Indians.
Yeah,
good name.
He was the best player on a couple of really, really bad transitional Indians teams after the Joe Carter, Corey Snyder years, but before all the superstars came in the mid-90s and they became a winning team year after year. Baerga was a leader. He was older than most of the guys. He had probably outperformed himself a little bit, and he was someone that the fans could cling on to and who hung around for that first pennant-winning team in 1995. You want that guy on the team. Wisdom or Schwindel could be that guy. But you can't say that you're building the next Cubs dynasty around these guys.
No, I agree. I think, like, there are people you want on your team, and you're happy they're there, and fans will get attached, and rightfully so.
But first, we have Mike Mulligan referencing Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome and Master Blaster, and now we get a Carlos Baerga reference. This is a show.
Carlos Baerga is solid. That was, like, my early days of watching.
You need to
Sports
call younger Center. Dudes, man.
Nah. We're in the right place. We're right in the wheelhouse.
But while we're talking about late bloomers, I don't know that you can qualify him as this because he's been good a long time, but Sal Perez hit his 46th home run of the season. The man is unstoppable. How do you put into context what he's been doing at the plate?
Someone in my comments section this morning mentioned Brady Anderson, which I thought was unfair.
When you think about the era.
Yeah, I mean, there are power numbers that are outliers. Perez is certainly having an outlier season from a power perspective. But, you know, he didn't really play much last year. He missed all of 2019 with elbow injuries. And before he got hurt, he was a pretty consistent, you know, 25, 27 home run kind of guy. Just a few extra, you know, feet here or there, a little bit of a change in your mechanics, a little bit of change in your approach can change that to, you know, a 35-40 season. He's on the outlying edge where you would expect him to be, but it's been so fun. And, you know, you just mentioned San Diego. You got to like teams who bring in players and try to win. The Royals certainly aren't in that position yet. They're not a very good team. But what the Royals have done the last couple of years is bring in brand names, bring in players who are identifiable to fans, keep veterans that even they're not the next, you know, core of a next great team are players that the fans like. The Royals have done that. They've kept Perez. They have Whit Merrifield. They have people that are user-friendly, sort of like the Cubs can do for the next couple of years. That's paying off. And if you're a Kansas City Royals fan right now, no, you're not going to be happy with how the team has done this year, but you could be happy that every day you've gone to the ballpark or tuned in a game, you've got a chance to see something good. And Sal Perez is that something good. And that's a nice thing for a team to do.
I want to mention something you included in your newsletter today that I just thought was really cool. I'm going to set aside some time for this since you shared it. And it is the oldest full radio broadcast of a regular season Major League Baseball game. Yankees versus Tigers, September 20th of 1934. And there's a lot of little details that you put in here, but I'm so curious about just as kind of a baseball radio nerd, of placements for advertisers. Like, it's like, well, they've gone to the old bullpen, and this is brought to you by Johnson's Nerve Tonic. You know, just the little things like that about who is like the wonderful, smooth tobacco taste. And that's what I'm interested in hearing, is how they sort of construct the radio broadcast.
In some ways, listening to this, and I listened to the whole thing yesterday because, again, the announcer, Ty Tyson, who is kind of a Detroit radio pioneer and legend, he should be a Frick Award winner. He should be in the Hall of Fame because he really blazed the trail for radio broadcasting of baseball. But at the time, you know, it's simultaneously old-fashioned and weird, but also weirdly modern in a lot of ways. We decry some of the sponsorship in the middle of games, and people got kind of cranky in the last couple of years when they would put commercials in the middle of the broadcast during pitching changes and do the split screen. Well, you know, he's introducing the lineup saying everything is brought to you by White Star Petroleum, which is mobile or whatever. And there's a whole lot of that. They would sponsor the whole broadcast. So some of that is sort of the same way we have it now. You've always had to pay the bills in radio, but it's also a little bit different. You know, he was doing double duty as the PA announcer. So they do a pitching change in the middle of it, which wasn't very common back then. And you could hear him go to the microphone and his own echoing, now pitching for the Tigers, you know, whatever. So that was kind of interesting. He's also got bad humor just like everyone else. There's a player called Sam Bird, B-Y-R-D, who played for the Tigers. And he said, well, Bird's up to bat. He should fly out, don't you think, folks? You know, and he was waiting for the... I know. It was very Krusty the Clown. Listening to this guy talk about Babe Ruth in modern terms, well, Ruth is not playing today because he has a Charlie horse, hit a couple of home runs in batting practice. Hopefully we'll see him here tomorrow. I mean, that's just amazing. It reminds you that for as far away and far back that this sort of history is, it's a lot closer than you think. You could almost reach out and touch it. And that's why listening to this broadcast, it's on YouTube, easy to find, or any other vintage broadcast is so, so fun.
Officially listed with a Charlie horse. I love it.
It does sound like something we should listen to, and I'll recap later, Craig. Thank you for that.
Oh, fantastic stuff. You have to listen to it.
Craig, thanks as always, man.
Thanks for having me.
That is Craig Calcaterra, indispensable baseball voice. Let's dig into the White Sox and what happened last night, how they talked about it, and some of the subtext to what's going on to try to get this figured out, shall we?
Oh, yeah. We gotta get into White Sox business next.
And you mentioned what Steve Stone said to us, too. And I hadn't quite put that together, where you asked a question about Carlos Rodon, and he answered it about Scott Boras.
Yeah, and it was just about the rest, the 9 days of rest he had leading up to this start. Well, it happened. And so did a lot of other things afterward.
That's coming up straight ahead. Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Tonight of Carlos Rodon, it wasn't one of his better ones. Although he did strike out six in three innings, didn't have the kind of velocity he would have liked, and consequently, the slider wasn't near where he wanted it.
Second base, Castro to first, and the Tigers have won the series opener. Sox had one hit in the final four innings. Tigers' bullpen was a little bit better tonight.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, it was a rough one. And at least in our house, and we've been watching White Sox baseball and watching Carlos Rodon of late, there's a lot of these sideways glances like, is it right, is it? Like, first it's like, well, he doesn't have the feel for the slider. And then it's he can't punch anybody out, and he's going 3-2 on everybody, and then he's just not throwing hard enough. It's itchy, it's twitchy, as Terry used to say. And after the game, there was some conflict as to what was going on. I mean, we all saw it. We all saw pitchers clearly laboring.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We know it when we see it. The numbers don't lie either. Your velocity, the count that you get into, how many pitchers per plate appearance, how many pitches per inning you're throwing. We know when we see it.
So let's hear what was said afterward first and then try to break some of this down, starting with the manager, Tony La Russa.
Well, the first two innings, we're all encouraged. Threw the ball well in the third. You know, he lost command. He was struggling. Actually fortunate to get with three runs, came back in, said he wasn't right. Soreness, and so we're concerned.
As far as pitching next week, is that subject to get moved around depending on how he feels or how he gets his test tomorrow?
Well, you know, if you ask for a seat of the pants opinion, I don't see how he'll pitch next week. But maybe it's one of those things where torsion adhesions was, I don't know, and he starts feeling better. You know, you prepare for the worst, you hope for the best.
The problem I have is that this is after they've already done this. They rested him. This is after the rest. This is far along in the process now.
It's not just that. It's also the history that he has with his throwing arm.
That, too, with shoulder and elbow. So, reporters went to Carlos Rodon after the game and talked to him about how he's feeling, and it got a little testy.
Hey, Carlos, Tony just told us that you came in after the third inning and made some comments to them, and there's a bit of concern over some soreness that you were experiencing. Kind of take us through how you felt out there today.
Felt pretty good going in. Quick first inning, and then they had some good at bats. And even though I struck out three in the second inning, every count was a full count. So threw a lot of pitches there. Nothing crazy, just heavy pitch counts to three innings. It makes it hard. You get in the third, and you know my team puts up three runs. Just disappointing. Disappointed in myself to go out there and give up three runs when they put up three runs for me.
You've obviously been experiencing some soreness after certain starts the last few months. Is this sort of the same thing that you've been dealing with in the past year?
Yeah, it's just normal soreness. nothing crazy.
Carlos, is this getting very disappointing at this point after everything you've gone through and finally you're near the end of the season and this has come up more than one time?
Are all these questions going to be about how I feel? Is my question to you guys? Because I'd like to talk about the game.
About how you feel, only because Tony made it sound like there was some concern for your, you know, abilities moving forward. Are you concerned about the next few starts?
No. I think we're good. Thank you, guys.
Okay, then.
Bro, what?
Well.
Like, that was the third question in, and we edited that pause. The pause after he asked that question, and between when that happened and Jesse Rogers said something, appropriately so, was about a good 4 or 5 seconds.
So then on the NBC Sports postgame, Ozzie Guillen heard that and said that's not okay.
Very weak. And a big Rodon fan. Very weak because the media just asking a normal question because he's upset because he got it back in. I don't blame him. But I told the media, treat the media like that just because they're asking how we feel. Yeah, they're asking how we feel because he only pitched 3 innings. Throw 89 miles per hour last pitch, and it come from 7,000 injuries. Well, maybe I had to ask them that question. I don't blame him to be upset about the game, but in the meanwhile, when you manage to say I'm concerned about it, and you got to say this is a routine soreness, that's what he say. No, it's just soreness. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. And I hope it is. But believe me, I hope God is just soreness. But you're not treating people like that because you lose a game. They asking questions because asking me about the game. How many questions? You only need to pitch 3 innings.
Good for Ozzy.
He's 100% right.
I think, this is my speculation, when La Russa offers that, like, Rodon and his, what do you say, his camp, his people, his side, like, they were on board with the rest. I think it was his camp was what he
Everybody
said.
Everybody that's looked at it, even as, you know, I guess his family and his representatives all think that we've done everything from the extra rest. We haven't pushed it. You know, he was pitching a day with, 8 or 9 days. He's only going to pitch one more time next week. So, yeah, he's done such a good job for you. He's been so important to the start that we've had. And being in first place, I'm just really concerned about him.
Why offer his family and his representatives unless that's been going on behind the scenes about how he's been handled? Is that why Steve Stone brought up his representative by name, Scott Boras? Are they terrified that what was going to be this incredibly lucrative bounce back 1 year contract that was going to net him a huge deal with multiple commas and zeros now may be undone by injury? Is that what's being betrayed
here? I see this as a pretty important note, Dan, because you think back, right? He got hurt in May of 2019, missed the rest of that season, had 34 innings before he got hurt, comes back late 2020, throws 7 2/3 total. So comes back this season, free agent, non-tendered, signed $2.5 million, and he's made almost every start, 23 starts, over 120 innings. The workload is sort of a shock to the system for a guy who suffered major Tommy John surgery, and here we are late in the season. This is pretty concerning soreness, I think.
It is, and it's not just the Tommy John. It's also the shoulder.
Which is more concerning, frankly.
That's frankly more concerning. I think we can all agree on that. This is established. And also, let's go back to my concerns at the beginning of the year, shall we? When I was worried about how long pitchers were being left in games. It's a fine line because I do appreciate the fact that Tony La Russa scoffs a bit at the times for the order penalty when it's appropriate to. I appreciate that. And I especially appreciate it with Lance Lynn. And I do the same with Carlos Rodon. But sometimes you have to once again manage how you're going to use these veteran arms at the end of the season. Did you really need that extra inning? Did you really need the extra 2 innings when you did have this lead in the division, when you do know what's ahead of you, when you know that these guys are not spring chickens? And I wonder if all of that comes back to bite you now. But I appreciated La Russa's candor here, and I am disappointed in Carlos Rodon. We as a media corps have given him the respect that he has been due. We talked about voluntarily on the show about the struggles he's gone through and how he deserved to have that no-hitter. And he deserves to get paid. And what he was doing on this team was appreciated by anybody who could watch baseball. And for him to be frustrated is one thing. But to do it like that is not okay. It's unreasonable. And frankly, says more about what you're trying to control than what you're trying to acknowledge.
And that's why I think he and his representatives, his family, whoever it is, are maybe looking big picture. Did you say that his wife was commenting on Twitter last night, too?
Yes, and I like Ashley. And I think that it's nice, and I appreciate the fact that she speaks freely, because I think that that's a good place for that. You know, I appreciate that she does that, and I don't want to criticize it too much. But Ozzie said, and NBC Sports Chicago retweeted it, that was weak of Carlos Rodon, the way he did what he did. Nobody's saying he's a weak person in general. This action, however, was not good. And she said that was a hot take, and she replied on Twitter.
Yeah, hot take SMH, shaking my head.
And I understand. She's pretty fired up every 5 days, but we gave her credit, too, when it was due. Nobody's trying to take anything away here. But whether or not you like it, we saw what we saw. We saw him go only 69 pitches on 9 days rest against the Detroit Tigers of all teams. We saw him labor. We saw him, and where he is typically known to throw 96, 97 in the sixth inning, get more velocity during games, go down to 89. Don't insult all of our intelligence. Of course, we're going to ask you how you feel. That's our job. And you know what fans want to know, too? Because they're expecting a playoff run here.
Now, as we put a bow on this, when you just heard our producer, Mike Rankin, go through the innings loads and where he is now, it is possible that this is fatigue. It is possible that this isn't acute injury, that this is fatigue, that his arm's just tired. And maybe this is enough for this year. It may just be that he's done for the year. That is on our range of possibilities here. It is also possible that he's hurt, that there is something wrong, that they've got to do an MRI, that they've got to look and do all the diagnostics and see if there is something structurally amiss. I don't know. I just know right now his ineffectiveness is going to make for some very difficult decisions. Not to mention what's going on with Dallas Keuchel, who himself has had a tough time. You know, I was out on that day when you and Chris Ranji were talking about it, but he doesn't like talking about being bad either.
No, and Keuchel, it was the same issue. It was the same type of concern, and he got visibly frustrated. And these are two veterans where we've talked to them about a lot of things, especially their injuries. We have talked to them about their injuries. And to see that kind of frustration and for them to get almost, combative is not the right word.
Yeah, terse, yeah, it is.
I don't know. Combative I reserve for like other things. But yeah, it was almost that way post-game out of the both of them. It's just surprising. And you can't disagree with what happens on the mound, that there isn't something more to it. And this is when you need there to not have this happen. This is not when you want this to happen. Let's not forget last year when people started coming out and saying we let our foot off the gas and there was some issue there as to he said. This is not the time to let this foundation start to crack.
When they backed into the playoffs and they whimpered out of the playoffs and fired their manager and their pitching coach.
I would love nothing more than for Carlos Rodon to go out there and just shove. That would be tremendous. That's not what happened here.
You've had pretty steady progress over the last few weeks. What's going to be the focus going into next week to really extend that?
Good luck. I mean, I really got nothing else for you guys.
Okay, Dallas.
What's your command? What do you think your command is? Which pitches do you think are working for you?
Why aren't you getting people out?
Or is that scheme?
Ouch. Won't answer those questions. You're talking about scheme.
No, man. I'm holding people to standards that they created because I believe that they can have them. But this is a playoffs. Blank cut in time, as I like to say.
We have the Midday Midway coming up next. All I'm going to ask you to do is choose your fighter. Goat or grizzly bear? Choose your fighter.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Go Bears! the first half or the second half. You know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Look what's on ESPN right now. There as we is. Look at the national headlines. Why are y'all talking about it so much? I don't understand. Well, so is the rest of the country.
Snippy Matt Nagy getting his national moment. Yep.
And Snippy Layla is going to snip back. It's what we do.
So far,
I'm sorry, is
done?
That talking about scheme or personnel?
No, what do we do so far? We talked about the Bears.
We talked about scheme and personnel.
And we talked with Craig Calcaterra and did sort of a deep dive into the Rodon moment last night and what's actually going on. And it just, he and his side seem scared. And maybe there's legitimate reason that they're scared. And they've taken something that looked like it was going to turn into a mega $1 million year, and maybe it's going to be less mega. Not MAGA.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Fair.
That's all. That is not our standard around here. When I saw the headline, New Zealand police arrest pair trying to enter Auckland with, quote, large amount of KFC, I was intrigued.
Are you not allowed to bring KFC into Auckland?
Maybe it's the combo that got too wild. Two men tried to reach the city where COVID restrictions banned takeaways with $100,000, three buckets of chicken, and an undisclosed quantity of fries. And then they show like the pictures of like the KFC order like on the police car. And I just want to say, smooth move, Auckland police. Oh yeah, this is illegal. It's totally illegal. We're gonna have to confiscate it. Darn. I wonder what's going to happen to this KFC.
Is that with Who's intent to sell? Were they going to resell it if people couldn't get it? Was that an order for multiple people, you think? Had they already told people they were going to make like a smuggling run?
Well, apparently.
An undisclosed amount of fries.
It's also
how many fries? I don't know. Undisclosed.
It's also funny because it's in that British, if you will, because it's off of The Guardian. Mm-hmm. So, like, when I had to read it, I had to translate a tad. Two men have been arrested after police say they had found them with a car boot full of Kentucky Fried Chicken. I believe that is a trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And over $100,000 in cash as they tried to cross the border into Auckland despite New Zealand's strict COVID-19 lockdown. This feels like a joke, but it's not a joke. And all they wanted was chicken.
Now.
I don't know about the cash. The cash is a little weird.
I had a rough afternoon yesterday, and it's because I made my annual mistake. When the Bears win their first game, and the fabulous fried chicken comes to the station, the first win every year, I overeat. And I get full, and I get tired, and I get cranky. So this is your job. This comes with when you sit next to me, it is your job to remind me on Victory Mondays or Victory Tuesday.
I already remind you to drink your water.
I know you've been very, very good about that, reminding me to drink water because I don't drink enough water. That when I like two small pieces is plenty. A leg and a wing or two legs, but like anything after that, I'm gonna be one toke over the line, sweet Jesus. So just
what happens? You get like chicken OD. Like,
yes,
and it's, Shane got and it's, Shane it's got great. A white meat piece, like the breast meat piece, and that's what I wanted. I'm not good with chicken; like I'm messy anyway.
Well, I don't care about that. Nobody wants to watch me eat anyway.
I did it wrong. I just did it wrong yesterday.
I like fried chicken.
I do. I love it. But just remind me. Just say you don't want to feel like crap. Take care of future you. Just think about future you, and even in the moment, you're going to want another piece. Give it 10 minutes. Let your body respond. Drink some water. Just remind me.
Present me never thinks about future me. Haven't I done a million commercials telling you why I never sleep anymore? Like,
well, that's because you have weird television viewing at night and odd things.
It's because I worked at night for 20 years.
Odd things like keep you awake. I'm pretty good about knowing when to shut it down.
That's what happens when you don't have no kids, plants, or dogs, or responsibilities. Wait, don't laser me. There's a conclusion here.
Right?
After the KFC arrest. How dare you? A police spokesperson said officers noticed a suspicious-looking vehicle traveling on a gravel road, and upon seeing the police car, the vehicle did a U-turn and sped off, trying to evade police. Let's get our KFC back. We'll just creep up real slow, like nobody will see us. And then the vehicle was searched, and police located the cash alongside the empty ounce bags and the large amount of takeaways. And here's what we got. 3 buckets of chicken, up to 10 tubs of coleslaw, and then the undisclosed amount of fries. What? Is that a crime? If getting KFC is wrong, I don't want to be right.
A hiker in Canada's Yoho National Park, British Columbia, encountered the carcass of a grizzly bear over Labor Day. According to wildlife officials, the bear had been gored to death by a mountain goat in a defense attack. Officials said that mountain goats rarely triumph in their altercations with bears. Really? The hell you say?
This is the goat of goats?
The goat of goats. The bear's carcass was discovered by a hiker on September 4th near the Burgess Pass Trail, the Rocky Mountain Outlook reported. At the time, the bear's cause of death could not be determined, so wildlife officials decided to conduct an autopsy. The bear's wounds were consistent with the predatory attack behavior of grizzly bears and defensive responses of mountain goats. Bears tend to focus on the head, the back, and the neck, and the shoulders. It's from above. The defensive response would be to protect itself using its horns. The autopsy revealed that the wounds were consistent with the size and shape of mountain goat horns. There are an estimated 15,000 grizzly bears living in British Columbia.
Well, apparently, they kick some butt.
This interaction was typical. The outcome was anything but. Grizzly bears are known to prey on mountain goats. Goats don't usually deploy fatal strikes against bears. They say goats can kill a bear, but it remains a rare event. All they need is a good horn jab well placed.
Don't we all?
Mountain goats are strong animals that are well equipped to defend themselves. So the answer, the correct fighter to choose in this case, mountain goat.
This brings up one of my favorite skate t-shirts from the 90s. This is a deep cut. Maybe somebody will get it. It is Toy Machine, Robot versus Bear. It was a famous skate t-shirt, and my brother had it, and I loved it. That is all.
Sage Rosenfels breaks down the Bears' quarterbacking situation and coaching and scheme and personnel like only he can. He's next on Bernstein and Raheem.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.